wasn't sure I'd ever step out and do my own thing. It took this place to do it.
And it is Virginia Tech. This isn't some rinky-dink ass program.
I don't know if I could follow that one up.
I'm yelling into the void, and that's what I like doing.
Pete, nobody's looking at your tweets.
We're going to recruit our footprint, and we're going to work our tails off to bring those Virginia kids to Blacksburg.
Those situations are the worst when you are on top of another guy.
The relationships are very important to me. That's what this place is built on.
That's your boy. That's your judge of character.
I'm going to end up in a Columbia prison.
That 95 Miami is my fondest memory. And maybe the experience after the Sugar Bowl with Wes Worsham and J.C. Price on Bourbon Street. Come on, J.C.
I want to know what you're drinking, Robbie.
It is roasty goodness, even though I was out.
What's the percent on that?
11.
It was a dream come true back then, and it's a dream come true today.
Hey, Mom, why don't you try a rail?
We're going to put this old guy in a grave.
For the love of the game.
And I mow the lawn after work before the podcast.
We just got better, guys.
Welcome to Too Deep, Hokies Under the Influence, a Sons of Saturday podcast. I'm your host, Pete B., and I don't have Sam here with me tonight, but if you're watching on YouTube, you can see the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Mike McDaniel, has joined the show. Mike, from the Hokie Hoops Pod, thank you for joining me, dude. This is going to be fun tonight.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for the invite. It's good to be back on. I think the last time I was on was last summer, I think, or maybe...
We did a summer show on, like, the recruiting in July, I think, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, leading up to... And we did, like, very early season predictions.
Some
and
previews.
And I think we were pretty close on our predictions, although it ended up kind of taking a different path than we all thought.
Yeah, it certainly did. Yeah, you did, I think, the second half with me. I can't remember because we've split our previews for the six games, like six games for one guy and six games for another.
Yep.
And you were great on that show, and that was a lot of fun. But tonight we're going to be covering a little bit of women's basketball, men, some spring football stuff. But first, Mike, why don't you give us a cheers and kick this thing off?
There's only one way to start this show tonight. Cheers to our newest national champion, Caleb Henson. We're going to talk a lot of wrestling here at the start, and I just want to make sure that we start this the appropriate way. We're two nights removed from him winning a national title, so cheers to Caleb.
Cheers.
I'm cheersing with the water here, Pete.
That's okay. That's okay. I've got a fun beer I'll talk about in a little bit.
Good.
We're going to do wrestling. That's going to be our first main topic, and we'll hit it because we do have a national champ, and you've got to talk about that. But I just wanted to hit off the top. The women's basketball season has come to a close. They were knocked out of the NCAA tournament in the round of 32 by Baylor. I'm sure most of you guys listening were watching the game. It was a sad ending for what was such an awesome season up until the UVA game and what happened in that game. The Kenny Brooks rumors started swirling last week. Mike and I will cover that later in the show. The men lost to Ohio State in round two of the NIT. After looking pretty good in round one, I actually thought the Richmond game was fun. It was kind of a fun way to end this season in Castle. And this offseason could be very interesting. There's going to be guys hitting the portal, I would have to imagine, in the next few days to 2 weeks. But no one really knows. And we're not going to really cover the men more than this tonight because there are just so many unknowns. But I did enjoy the Richmond game, and I just wanted to see your kind of final thoughts on the way the season shook out there.
I think if you had told me, like last summer, last time we recorded, that Virginia Tech was not going to have Rodney Rice, and you told me that Virginia Tech was going to go about 500 in the ACC and they'd be kind of a fringe bubble team, I would have said, okay, that sounds about right. Yeah, was the ACC down? And it's fun to have that conversation now with, you know, four ACC teams
right.
in Sweet 16. But was the ACC down this year? Yeah, I mean, a little bit it was in the regular season. And so for Virginia Tech to go 10-10 in conference play, it's kind of this weird, almost like a twilight zone, where it's like, yeah, I feel good about, you know, knowing the circumstances were what they were, and you lose Makai Long, and you didn't really have a backup to Sean Padula because he left basically a week and a half before the season started. And Virginia Tech went 500 in ACC play. Okay, great. But was there also a lot to be desired with the season and kind of some of the losses that the team endured? Yeah. So, I mean, there was certainly some disappointment. And I think this upcoming season for Mike Young and this offseason especially becomes especially crucial.
It is. It definitely is. And I agree with you that once Rodney Rice left, we knew the ceiling had come down quite a bit. And I talked a little bit about this with Ed when we were at Commonwealth recording a week and a half ago. And I thought for when it was all said and done, like it was a pretty darn good coaching job. by Mike Young, and I know he's, you know, people are not calling for his head. That's not the right thing, but people are questioning him, right? Yeah. Even though he won the ACC 2 years ago, there are questions like, can this guy get it done? But I think people plugged into the program like yourself, there's a certain financial aspect that goes into it. There's been some weird things that have happened, like the Rodney Rice thing and Maddox leaving the team mid-year last year, and all kinds of different things that have hurt his overall record and whatnot. But yeah, this is a big offseason. We got to see if we are keeping Padula, if some of the other guys might roll out of town, and what the roster construction looks like next year. And I love Mike Young. I believe in him. I think if given the right support and backing, he could have a tremendous rest of his career at Virginia Tech. He's already had a great beginning. And so with the monkey wrench that was thrown into the year at the beginning, I thought, I agree with you. Solid season, and it could have been better, obviously.
Yeah. He can coach, man. I push back on the narrative that Mike Young is like forgotten how to coach and he can't get it done in the ACC and he can't be a big time, you know, college head coach at a power five, or I guess power four now level, right? A power conference level. I push back against that, man. Like, if you're a good coach, you can coach at all levels. I think he's shown the ability to do that in his first handful of years in Blacksburg. I don't think there's any real question about it, to be honest with you. I do think the roster construction is really important, and I think that's something that obviously as a head coach he has to own a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also some circumstances there, especially now with NIL and things like that, where, you know, the recruiting game in college basketball has changed a lot. And when people compare the Buzz Williams era to the Mike Young era, it's legitimately apples to oranges. They're two different coaches, and Buzz is a heck of a recruiter. Nobody's ever going to dispute that. But Mike Young has recruited pretty well. It's been the retention of top-tier talent, and a big part of that is NIL, that Buzz Williams, at least from a legal standpoint, right, with NCAA regs and all that stuff, didn't really have to deal with.
No,
so it's,
he didn't,
it's totally,
no.
Totally different now. It's just a totally different game, and the staff has to adapt, and I know Ryan Nadeau just left today for the ODU assistant coaching job under Mike Jones, which is a promotion for him, which is big time. So there's going to be a staff change there, at the very least one guy leaving. And
maybe more than one.
Maybe more than one. So I think there's going to be a shakeup with both the roster and the coaching staff, and it'll be interesting to see how he adapts.
Yes, and I think he can, and I think he will, because he knows all the stuff we're talking about. And I think the administration also knows it. And we're in a very tenuous spot with the basketball programs in general. Hanhurst is going to be busy and chaotic, I feel like.
It's going to be popping.
All right, let's move to the spring football hype. We talked a little bit about it last show, but practice is in full swing. We're going to get to football notes, including the big move on the recruiting trail later. That was a 2025 commit we picked up. Softball, number 12. I think that ranking, I think it might come out tomorrow, but either way, last week it was 12, 25, 5 and 1, 9 and 0 in ACC play. Baseball up to number 13 today with
Wagon.
8 ACC teams ranked. I like kind of besmirched baseball earlier in the year. Wow. I'm like blown away about what they're doing at the plate. It's freaking amazing. 8-1 in conference, and this is an extremely good conference. It's so weird how the ACC, while it may struggle in football and men's basketball, like everything else seems really good.
Rolling along.
It's so strange. All right, so we did our on-location recording at Commonwealth. It was a really fun time. If you haven't listened, go back and listen. If you're passionate about craft beer in any way, you need to listen to the interview with Jeremy Biggie, the head brewer and founder of Commonwealth. It was really cool to hear someone so passionate about their craft explain about it. And on a related note, we are going to be back doing the spring game pregame show this year down in Blacksburg. It's going to be at Tots this year, and it's going to start pretty much right when the doors open. I think Tots opens at noon on that Saturday. The show is going to start at 12:15. I think we're going to be on the back deck. Not entirely sure on that, but it's going to be Billy, Pat, Sam, myself, Ed, the Boundary Corner guys, Trotmill Horse will be back, Dan from Tales of the Terror Dome. Mike, I don't know if you're down, but maybe you'll be there too.
If I make it, I'll be there.
Okay, sweet, sweet. But yes, we will be at Tots on that spring game Saturday. So come on out and hang. There will be promotion and whatnot going on Twitter over the next couple weeks. And our best win since 2000 tournament is currently in its championship game. We got down to Ohio State 2014 and Miami 2003. And when there's already been about 300 votes cast, and it's tight. Last time I looked, it was like 52-48. And so it's a very tight matchup. I picked Miami. I was at that game and it meant a lot to me. And I know it wasn't for a championship, but neither was Ohio State. And so you can beating them in the shoe, having our highest ranked win at home, you do it in your head. You figure out what's the best and cast your vote. But what do you think about that matchup?
I voted for the 03 Miami game, and I was at the 14 game in the horseshoe. Okay. I just think the 03 Miami game, just in terms of like Lane Stadium lore, is such an important game. And the Ohio State game, like me being a senior and going back to Lane Stadium like 6 days later and watching Virginia Tech just lay an egg against East Carolina in a nooner on a Saturday is brutal, right? Like, you're coming off that night game. It basically feels like a short week because you're playing a night game in the shoe. You have a travel day Sunday, and now you have to prepare for a sleepy East Carolina game in a nooner, and you just lay an egg defensively.
And they always give us hell, and that game was the worst.
It was ridiculous.
I don't know whether that makes us look back and appreciate the Ohio State win even more, because we saw what that team was capable of when Michael Brewer was at his best.
Yeah.
And it was such, like, I don't know, an iconic victory, but Miami 2003, Miami was on that long win streak. Like, they hadn't lost a game in forever when we beat them, and it was not even close. And so two great games. Go cast your vote, and we will crown a winner some point tomorrow. People watching on YouTube, if you could, give us a like. It really helps us out, gets us in the algorithm, all the good stuff. So make sure you're subscribed to the Sons of Saturday YouTube channel. You'll get all of Billy and Pat stuff, all of Mike and Ed stuff, and me and Sam stuff. And, you know, like the video. It just helps us out. Appreciate it. All right, let's talk wrestling. The team finished seventh at the NCAA National Championships, but Caleb Henson, at 149 pounds, won the national title. And in total, there were four All-Americans. Of course, Caleb, Bryce Andonian, that was his third All-American. Makai Lewis, four-time All-American, first time ever in Tech history. And Thomas Stewart, the freshman, he finishes seventh and gets an All-American nod as well.
Stud.
I mean, I can't wait to see what Stewart does throughout the rest of his career, but Henson's going to be around too. And he became the second national champ in Virginia Tech wrestling history, joining only Makai. And I wanted to kind of go through his matches here, because he kind of dominated almost every match. It was 18-3 in the first round, 7-2 in the second round. The final was 15-7, and he just looked like a man possessed. But that 1-0 win over Lovett in the semis, when the kid from Nebraska, that was so stressful. Like, and didn't he like score that right at the end too?
Yeah, more stressful than the championship match. Way more stressful. You know, you look at the championship, and Henson dominated basically from start to finish, got out to a big lead early, and just kind of cruised, right?
He almost pinned the guy. Not the case
in the semi. Right, yeah, no. Exactly.
Yeah, and to be fair, Lovett was the one. Yeah. And so Gomez getting to the finals, the kid from Michigan, like a little bit of a Cinderella. He was a sixth seed, and Henson was the four, correct?
Yeah.
And so taking out Lovett was definitely probably the harder step for sure. Caleb. But when he, and I'm not great with all the terms, Mike, but when he like stopped Gomez on that first like shoot and went back at him, that was like when the match got decided. That was pretty early on, and he got big points for that.
Yeah. Basically almost pinned him. I mean, he was tied up there for a while. And again, I'm not great with wrestling terms either, but I knew that was a pivotal, point early in the match when that happened. So, and the announcers going crazy too. I was like, okay, this is a big moment.
I love watching wrestling because of the announcers. They always seem to just get so jacked up. And I guess it's because it's such short spurts of action that you can like let it loose, because you're only going to get so many chances to make a call, and they do such a good job.
Yeah.
But I mentioned Makai becoming our first four-time All-American. I think we got to talk just a little bit about Tony Roby and what he's done at this university. it's absolutely incredible. 26 All-Americans since he took over for Dresser. Two national champions, which we know what UVA likes to talk to us about, national champions, and it's always like you have zero team national champions championships. But picking up two in wrestling over the last few years, it feels pretty good. That's not just some like also ran sport.
Right.
It's a cool sport. It's on national TV when the finals are on, and it just it's such a point of pride. And like as a Virginia Tech alum, watching Caleb win that, like I am so proud of him and of Tech for winning that title.
Yeah, it was. It's a it's kind of a where were you moment too, which seems funny to say for wrestling, but like. Twitter was popping. Like it was popping when Mekhi won his a few years ago. It was the same deal. It was just, you know, you follow these guys, even if you're not an avid wrestling fan, following them all throughout the regular season, like you follow them in the NCAA tournament when the basketball's on, by the way. Like they're on national TV.
What is wrestling doing putting their championships on the same weekend as March Madness?
I know.
Like that just seems like a mistake.
It's not a decision I would make. Let's put it that way. But yeah, I mean, I'm flipping over. I'm watching all the basketball games. I'm flipping over. I'm like, all right, I know Caleb's wrestling tonight. Like, let's see what he's about to do. And yeah, unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. He had a couple of early escapes, too. Like, Gomez had a couple of times where I thought he might actually pin Caleb, and Caleb just escaped it like two or three times. I was like, all right, this this is like looking as stress-free as it could possibly look for a championship match.
Right. There were several top 10 finishes at Nationals for Roby too, and that's something else I wanted to talk about, and including 7th this year.
Yep.
And that 7th might have actually been considered a disappointment to him and some of the people close to the wrestling program, because I think we were preseason top 5. But that shows you where this program is at and where the expectations are at, is that they're kind of expecting to finish top 10 and maybe even top 5 in the country and eventually compete for the team national title in wrestling. I'm just so impressed. And when you lose a guy like Dresser, who's still at Iowa State, who just won the Big 12, you don't think that you can just replace him with someone who's arguably just as good.
Right.
And that is exactly what Whit Babcock and Virginia Tech did with Tony Roby. And I just hope we can hold on to him, because there's so many young guys still on this team that have such a bright future. You're talking about 10 guys that qualified. We had 10 guys that qualified last year, 9 All-Americans just in the last 2 years. And so it's so impressive. And I said, maybe Roby's the best coach on campus. Kenny Brooks is in that conversation, clearly.
Yeah, right.
And I'm hoping that he stays on campus.
I was going to say, you know, Roby might be the best coach on campus by default here soon.
Yeah, soon enough. But, I mean, our softball coach is great. The baseball coach is pretty darn good. It's amazing what Whit has done with all the Olympic sport hires and the basketball hires. And really his only miss was Justin Fuente, which was,
right,
you know, thought to be a good hire at the time. Like,
yeah,
his basketball hires have been kind of off the charts when you consider what they've done, and something that TSL touched on today too. So it's just amazing, and I'm ecstatic for Caleb in this program. That's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And like the concern I think that fans had of the wrestling program when Kevin Dresser left, it was kind of this big unknown. It's like, okay, what are they going to do now, right? Because Dresser was the guy who really built up the wrestling program to mm-hmm. kind of be what it is. And then I the concern I think was like, will Roby match that and then take it to another level? And he has. Like, he has done that, and by all accounts, like, probably the most successful hire Whit has made. And it just flies under the radar a little bit, I think, for the casual Virginia Tech sports fan, because it is wrestling. It's not football. It's not, you know, the two basketball programs. It flies under the radar, but I do think it's definitely in contention for the best hire he's made at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And I wonder, these kind of things all take time. Like, I was getting a lot of texts on Saturday night, like, hey, he's about to be up, whatever.
Yep.
That wasn't happening 5 years ago, six years ago. And, you know, and now we've gotten to a point where I think it's going to continue. The profile has been raised. And it's going to continue to be raised as long as he's here and performing well. These things, that's the same exact thing we saw with Kenny Brooks and the basketball program. And that's what we're going to get to now. It's a good transition.
Yep.
Let's talk We'll save Kenny Brooks for a minute from now, because I want to get to the NCAA tournament, and I'll start with round one just because that was fun. Like round one against Marshall, it was a good time, and Georgia had foul trouble early, and it wasn't so smooth. We got out to that 10-0 lead, then she hit the bench. Marshall kind of started coming back a little bit, but the rest of the girls really stepped up, and Clara Strock and Matilda Eck were the first two to be those girls that stepped up.
Well, I mean, I think the big question when it was apparent that if Liz didn't play, right, she at least wasn't going to be 100% if she did. And, you know, going into the tournament before it was announced that she tore her ACL and it was as serious as, you know, was feared, the question really was like, okay, Clara Strack has been good in relief of Liz Kitley this year, but we haven't seen her like be forced into playing these gigantic minutes, because Liz Kitley by and large like stays out of foul trouble. You know, she's a good defender, she doesn't foul. Clara, to have that game that she had when the lights are brightest is really impressive to me, and a testament to the type of player she's going to be at Virginia Tech. Like, with the way she played against Marshall, you forget she's a true freshman, right?
I know.
And like, yes, she was a rotational player. Yes, she played a decent amount this year. Yes, she played most games Virginia Tech played. We know what she's capable of, but it's one thing to know what she's capable of as a freshman and then to just go out and do it in an NCAA tournament game in the way that she did. She was 7 of 7 from the floor. She finished with 17 points and 5 rebounds. It was incredibly crucial, right, that she contributed
in
that
way. Did she have 4 blocks too?
Unreal. Unreal.
like that's a, because that for me, I've been more worried about her defense in terms of replacing Liz.
Yes.
And I mean, she really was amazing, and making all your shots, that's a good way to do it.
I love her demeanor. She's like stoic and just like a stone cold killer on the court. Mm-hmm. Right. She's a freshman. Like, I can't emphasize that enough. Like, she's not going out there and playing scared and like being intimidated by the moment. She just goes out and does her thing and shows no emotion. I love it. Like, it's got to be a little bit intimidating if you're an opposing player and you're seeing a freshman play like that.
Yeah, and that's someone that, whatever happens with the coaching transition, we want Clara Strack.
Gotta have her.
Because she is a stud. Matilda Eck also broke out of her slump in a big way in this one. 21 points on 6 of 9 shooting, 5 threes in the game. And I was so happy for her because she's probably been thinking about like not scoring in the last 3 games nonstop for days. Yeah. And she just had a fantastic game. And that was with Georgia not having her best night. And that's something that ended up carrying over to Baylor, unfortunately. She just had 9 and 4, did Amor. Another girl stepped up, Rose Michaud, you know, also playing kind of that big role. 4 for 4, 9 points. Wenzel had 13. She went to the line a ton, made 9 of 11 free throws in the game. And Samil, she just kept getting better and better throughout this season and has been just a blast to watch the last like 10 or so games. Like 14 rebounds in that game and 5 assists. What a game by Olivia Samil.
Yeah, unbelievable rebounder. Became all the more important. She's been a good rebounder throughout the year and it's improved, right? And I think she's been more comfortable in the offense just from start to finish. But the way that she rebounded became all that much more important when Liz was out of the lineup, and she didn't shy away from the moment. Matilda Eck, you know, snapping out of her slump, didn't make a field goal in the ACC tournament. Like, it's pretty unprecedented.
That's crazy, yeah.
She led the conference in three-point percentage this year, and she didn't make a bucket in the ACC tournament. So for her to snap out of the slump in the way she did over the 2 games is really impressive. Virginia Tech obviously needed it. We'll talk about the Baylor game in a second, but for her to kind of single-handedly keep the Hokies in that game and then to lead the charge in the Marshall game offensively, I think is a testament to her just, you know, that confidence not wavering, even though she really did struggle to put the ball in the basket against Miami and Notre Dame just a week ago, right? So a week and a half ago, I guess now. So
yeah, she had a week to dwell on it too, right?
Right. She had to sit on it like no game for like 8 or 9 days, whatever it was. And you have to just like sit on it and think about how poorly you shot the ball, and then to come out and have that kind of shooting performance in back-to-back games, I think is really, really impressive.
Yeah, and we beat Marshall 92-49. I sent a like kind of a joking text midway through that game like, I'm beginning to think Marshall's not very good.
Right.
Exactly. I know we were playing well, but they obviously had a short roster, which got talked about a lot going into the game. But man, did we just destroy them in the second half. Let's move on to Baylor. This was Sunday night's game. We're recording on Monday, so it's still pretty fresh. It was a battle, and it was pretty tight all the way through. We ended up losing by 3. But before the half, I was getting a little nervous Baylor could start to run away with it. They had an 8-point lead. Yep. We cut it to 6 just before the half. And then in the third, like, Amor started to get on track a little bit. We tie the game. And then third quarter's about to end. And, Mike, you know what happened. They hit that half-court shot.
Yep.
And we've seen those types of shots on the men's side of things, like, many times over. If you're an older Hokie fan, you've seen them. The Duke game, the Xavier game, there's a bunch of them. But this one hurt, because when that went in, it was like, shoot, we just did all that work to get the game tied. And that girl who just was going off, Jada Walker,
yeah,
she hit one of the biggest shots of the night.
Yeah, she finished with 28 points. She was unbelievable. She had like that ridiculous and one late that really put the game away for Baylor. She was really, really good. But yeah, it felt like one of those games too where, like, you know, offense is going to be at a premium when you're without an All-American, right? And when your other All-American is struggling to shoot the way that she did. Like, Georgia Amor was uncharacteristically off in the two tournament games, just did not shoot the ball well. And I understand the Marshall game, you know, you're in foul trouble, you're a little bit out of a rhythm. You know, she wasn't in foul trouble last night and really just could not buy a bucket. It was it wasn't just Georgia. Like, there were a lot of open looks that Virginia Tech had in the first half in particular.
No doubt.
Wide open. Yep. Nobody within, you know, 3 or 4 feet. Ball movement was really, really good. I thought the offense was actually humming all night despite, you know, the poor shooting numbers. I thought Virginia Tech was turning down good shots for great shots pretty consistently all night, and I thought played really well offensively despite not shooting the ball very well. But it was really the shots that did not go down in the first half where I was sitting there thinking, man, like, it feels good to only be down a handful at halftime. And at the same time, you're kind of like lamenting the fact that you missed so many open ones and you knew Baylor was going to make some adjustments, and they did. And I thought that while Virginia Tech, I think, shot it better, I have to go back and look at the splits, but it felt like they shot it better, at least in the second half. It just didn't really feel like Virginia Tech could really seize the momentum back. Like,
we never could grab it, right? We never just like had that run where everyone's going nuts and we feel like, okay, we've got this now. We're at home. We're going to win it. Like,
right.
Everything we did, Baylor had a punch back, you know, yeah. Like we would take a few punches. They'd hit us right back. And so it was a weird night, especially because you're right. Like, the ball movement was so good. I actually tweeted that during the game, like, these baskets will come. The ball movement, yeah, and the looks are really good. And sometimes the shots just don't drop, you know, and it killed us. And then, we still had a shot, and that was, yeah, the part that was tough is at the end, we're like waiting for Georgia. Like, at some point she's going to do her thing. And like, she did hit a couple of late threes. The one banked in, the other one wasn't super pretty, but they went in.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, but that was 6 of her 18 points. And yeah, she was just 7 of 22 from the floor. Like, she didn't have it, you know, and it's a bad time for your best player when your other best player is out not to have it. And Matilda did her damnedest. I mean, she hit another 4 threes. She had 19 points, grabbed 6 boards. I mean, she did just about everything she could, yep, other than, you know, hit a few more threes to keep us in that game. And a lot of people were saying on the timeline that we got out-coached towards the end. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know how, to be honest with you. I did see that. I don't know how much I subscribe to it, to be honest.
I'm not sure either. Baylor was playing outstanding, and they I think people had a problem with the inbounds plays that we weren't defending.
Right, which, okay. But also, like, they got some big-time players, and they're going to make some – like, the stuff that Walker was doing last night, like, that's how you go – it's a de facto road game. That's how you go on the road and just, like, take the will of the opponent. I mean, she was knocking down big-time shots all night. It wasn't just the half-court heave. I mean, she was making ridiculous shots all night. The crazy and one at the end. It felt like every shot she put up, especially in the fourth quarter, was going in. Virginia Tech had a really hard time defending her. And look, it's one of those games, too, where, like, when you're playing without Liz Kittley, the 8-point deficit Virginia Tech was facing in the first half, I had the same thought. I was like, uh-oh, like, here right. we go. Is this going to be, like, a Notre Dame situation in the ACC tournament where, like, Virginia Tech hung with Notre Dame for a while, and then all of a sudden they just made that one run, and it was like, damn, 8 points feels like 15 points when you when you're really struggling to create offense. And, you know, to be honest with you, like, I think Virginia Tech had their chances. I really do, and I understand the frustration. I tweeted it out myself with Baylor's coaching staff working the referees. You do what you got to do, right? And, like, right. I was frustrated with it, too, in-game. But, like, that's not where Virginia Tech lost the game. The Hokies lost the game with all of the open looks they missed in the first half. And that's what I kept coming back to today, is kind of, like, emotion removed from it a little bit and just kind of taking a step back. It's like, where did this all go wrong? Obviously, we know the ceiling was incredibly lowered, right? It was not going to be the same types of tournament expectations once Liz Kitley was lost for the year, right? All of a sudden, you're not having, like, the Final Four national championship aspirations anymore. But you did feel like if Virginia Tech could make it to the second weekend, that would be fantastic. But, you know, you remove the emotion from it, and it's just like, all right, a lot of open looks in the first half didn't go. Thought Virginia Tech, by and large, defended relatively well all night.
Yeah, I mean, you had one girl that was in kill mode, you know, right. and it sucks because she normally scores in single digits. You go back, look, she had a 19-point game at one point during the year. Yeah. That was her high. This was right. her high of the year.
She lost her mind. Point. Yeah.
She lost her mind. She went nuts. And, you know, sometimes there's just not a lot you can do about that. You can switch your defense, but then what else are you sacrificing? They don't just have – she's not their best player. Like,
no,
they
right,
have,
right.
They have very other good players that could have done it. And what it really comes down to is you said the ceiling on this team had been reduced when we lost Liz Kitley, and that's without a doubt.
Right.
But with Clara Strack playing the way she did and Matilda Eck stepping up, if we had gotten the best version of Georgia, the Georgia we know and love
– you're in the Sweet 16.
We could be in the Sweet 16. Who knows what could happen?
Right.
It stinks. It just stinks. And the videos of the girls walking to the locker room, they were, I'm not going to lie, a little heartbreaking. They were all, you know, pretty upset. Liz is on crutches. It's an end of an era. And that was part of what makes those videos of them, like, walking off the court. And some of them knowing, you know, the Kayla King, Liz Kitley, potentially Georgia, and some of the other girls, like, it's the end of an era. This was a special team, and it wasn't supposed to end like this. Like, no. Kenny said as much in his presser.
Yeah. I mean, the core of this team, this group, is what put Virginia Tech women's basketball on the map. Like, Virginia Tech's had good players before Kitley and Amor and Kayla King. Mm-hmm. They'll have good players after them, but you had two All-Americans on the roster. You have Kayla King, who is going to go down the record books as one of the greatest three-point shooters in women's basketball history at Virginia Tech. And they elevated the program to unprecedented heights, making a first Final Four, selling out Castle on multiple occasions this year, hosting tournament games in Castle 2 years
two,
in a row.
2 years in a row, yeah.
2 years in a row. A one seed last year in the NCAA tournament. Like,
and could have been a one seed this year.
Again. Could have absolutely been a one
probably
seed.
Should have been.
If they're healthy, Liz doesn't get hurt with the way they were playing. Like, Virginia Tech would have loved another chance at Notre Dame healthy. Absolutely. On a neutral court, they would have loved that second chance in about a week and a half. So, yeah, not supposed to end like this, and this was the group that elevated the kind of the aura of women's basketball at Virginia Tech, and we'll see what happens with Kenny, obviously, but to have this era end like this is a tough pill to swallow, no doubt about it.
It is, because you can have your ACC regular season title and your tournament title win from last year. This isn't a program that has won a lot of titles, and we have two in the last two seasons.
Yep.
And so we're going to see some changes this offseason, even if Kenny stays, because of the girls that are leaving. And whether the overall change is seismic or it's just tweaks, we will find out probably in the next few days. Honestly, I've been thinking about this. Like, we can put this podcast out and, like, we'll learn that Kenny staying or leaving. Like, this could be outdated as soon as we post it.
Pete, we've been in the podcast game long enough, you and I. Like, we know exactly how this works.
And so let's get to Kenny. Last Wednesday, Matt Jones of KSR, Kentucky Sports Radio, tweeted that it was believed Brooks had interviewed for the vacant Kentucky women's job. That was before Coach Cal and the men had flamed out.
That's important.
Which may play into this, right? Brooks signed a $6.4 million extension just last summer, which pays him up to $1.2 million by the end of the deal. And to give you guys a little perspective, $1.2 million to $1.3 million, that would put you right at the bottom of the top 10 coaches in the women's basketball game. So he's not in there now. He was the 22nd highest paid coach this season in women's college basketball, just under $1 million. But then Mark Berman had the piece that Witt had expressed optimism that Tech was going to be able to keep Coach Brooks. Just the fact that they feel okay. There was not like, I don't know if optimism was even the right word, but
a different feel to it than, like, for example, when that Virginia Tech Sweet 16 team got eliminated and David Teal was asking Witt about Buzz and he was like, yeah, we have a meeting tomorrow. It's like, oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So it felt different.
It did. And the post game comments, they felt from Kenny, felt like a farewell speech a little. Now, I could be reading too much into that, and it's a tough moment. It's a high emotions moment. But that was just kind of what a lot of people, and me included, kind of took away from that, was like, that sounds kind of like a guy that might be leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been playing it pretty coy, right? I mean, he really just spoke about it being an end of an era. Like, we just talked about it wasn't supposed to end like this. Like, that was the tail end of that long answer where it felt like a farewell speech. But then he also talked about, oh, I got to start recruiting the transfer portal tonight. Okay, well, you can read into that and say, okay, are you going to be recruiting the transfer portal hard for Kentucky or for Virginia Tech? You could really read into it if you want to. I mean, on the flip side, when he was asked about it before the NCAA tournament began, he was just like, oh, there's crazy stuff on Twitter this time of year. This is what happens when you have...
But there was no denial.
It's like, okay, but did you talk to Kentucky or not? Because that's like the question. And, you know, Berman really pressed... And I appreciate this. Like, Berman catches a lot of crap on... So we know that. But I appreciated the story. I thought it was good reporting. And you could tell in how he wrote it that he asked Witt the same question like 17 different ways, which is what gets coaches annoyed with Mark Berman. But Witt answered the question. Like, he, you know, you lead the horse to water, right? And, you know, Berman's asking, okay, did he interview with Kentucky? Witt saying you have to ask Kenny that is a pretty good indication he probably talked to Kentucky in some way, shape, or form. Even with Witt saying, well, it might not be all that it seems on social media, which we figured that was probably the case. Maybe Kenny didn't talk to him directly. Did Kenny's agent speak with them? Of course they did, right? Of course they did. Nobody's denying that at this point, that there was some sort of communication. Kentucky's interested, you know, Mitch.
Or
Northam,
that there was even an offer, right?
Like, right. Mitch Northam tweeted that, you know, Kenny was at the top of Kentucky's list. You know, that's, you know, he's going to be a serious candidate there. He is a serious candidate there. It seems like that. So it's going to come down to whether or not Virginia Tech is interested in ponying up whatever amount of money or resources outside of just salary that it's going to take to keep Kenny Brooks away from a college basketball blue blood. And I know that Kentucky is not top of the women's game, but they historically have a good women's basketball program. They do. And that's a school that really prioritizes hoops. And I get it. But Witt's going to have a decision to make. And I think there is a lot that goes into it, even outside of the basketball program itself, that he's going to have to consider.
Well, and Chris Coleman brought this up. And so I'm not trying to bite on what he said, but we talked about the number of good coaches right now at Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. I mean, Coach Pry could be due for a little bit more money if we have a good season.
Yep.
And those other Olympic coaches that have done really well might be going out and getting offers and then potentially in need of more money. So it's not just keep Kenny Brooks and, you know, you just pay him. He's a Final Four coach. Like, yes, sometimes I feel that way, but it's just not that easy when you're going over the budgets and whatnot. And let's talk about just the money aspect of it, because if Kentucky comes in, like I said, 1.2, 1.3 puts you in the top 10, which at this point is probably somewhere where Kenny should be.
Right. Like, I agree.
If we're talking about him in the stature that we believe him to be. And yeah. So if they come in with a $20 million deal over 10 years, like, yeah, that could be hard for him to deny. That's like, right. He's been making good money living in Southwest Virginia. So he's already a rich man, right. But like, that's generational money. Right. But I don't think that Virginia Tech would be uncompetitive on a year to year basis. Like, we could probably get pretty close to a yearly salary that they're paying him at Kentucky. It comes down to stuff like you said, extracurriculars, whether that's an NIL pool, a coach's salary pool that's bigger for his assistants, just random like recruiting benefits that we can't even believe, like private jet access. Who knows? Like,
right.
There's,
yeah, right.
There are so many things that go into it. And at the end of the day, my thought is that money – like his personal money, I don't think will be the biggest factor to him taking this job. I could be dead wrong.
I don't either. And I've been thinking about this long and hard. I am in total agreement with you there. Like, I don't think, based on what we know about Kenny, and you made the point about the generational wealth aspect and, you know, what kind of money that would be in that scenario, like that example you just gave. Understood. Like, you and I both understand that. But based on what we know about Kenny and just kind of what kind of guy he is and what he's interested in, I feel like what's going to be more important to him is what Virginia Tech can do for him and his staff to continue to develop and make an impact on the girls that he's recruiting, right, and bringing into the program, what kind of impact he can make on them once they're on campus, and how he can bring this program to a national championship level. The question that Witt is going to ask Kenny Brooks, I'm sure he's already asked Kenny Brooks this, is what do we need to do on our side for you that brings this to the national championship level that you need? What is missing? Because Virginia Tech's been close, right? They were minutes away from national championship appearance last year. Minutes away. I hate bringing that up and reminding everybody.
It's true,
but like,
it's true, yeah.
But I mean, this program really is on the cusp of being like that consistent top of the sport. I mean, they're playing in that Ally Tip-Off Classic again in Charlotte next year. You don't get to play in that Tip-Off Classic, right, and play against a premier basketball school in Iowa even without Caitlin Clark for a second year in a row if you're not doing something really great on the hardwood.
Yeah, they're starting to get viewed as the like you said, top tier of the sport. Like, right. It's the same thing in the men's. Like, that early Tip-Off Classic that they have with Michigan State and Kansas and Kentucky, like, that's what this is on the women's side. And
are you invited to the party? Like, you're starting to get invited to the party.
Do you want to let that go, especially in a sport? Like, people will call women's basketball non-revenue, right? Because it's not men's and it's not football. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's starting to become that. The numbers for women's basketball were through the roof this year. Mm-hmm. Whether it's just, you know, Caitlin Clark, yes, but South Carolina, LSU, our girls, like everything contributed to those numbers. The Stanford team,
USC,
and so, USC Notre is tremendously good. Notre Dame. And so this sport is coming along. Do you want to have someone that can keep you at that table going forward? Now, we did also talk about Witt's hires, and he's done well there. So he could probably replace Kenny with Kenny Brooks, with someone pretty good. I don't know if I should keep calling him Kenny or Coach Brooks, but whatever. I don't know if I'm on a first name basis with him or not, but we could probably replace him with somebody good, but we know what we have in him already. And he's tremendous and he's already here and he's a Virginia guy. So what I think it'll come down to, getting back to the money point, is does he want a new challenge? Does he feel that he has run his course and he can do all he can do at Virginia Tech, and he wants to see if he can do it at another program. You know, just a personal challenge. I think that will be the basis of his decision more so than anything else, because we've all come to those points in our lives where we've done something for a while. I lived in DC for a long time, and eventually I was like, I got to move out of here. I got to do something else and go to a different avenue in my life. And he may feel that way. And so that's what I think it's going to come down to. But $20 million sounds pretty good too, if that were the offer.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. And I mean, my whole thing too is like, you got to decide if you're with, like, how important is not only women's basketball, because you can have this argument on the men's side too, but like, how important is basketball going to be to the athletic department moving forward? Like, Virginia Tech is and always will be a football school. I'm not going to sit here and do the whole Tim Sands thing. Like, and that's been taken way out of context.
It's a joke. It's a joke that we like to have, is Virginia Tech's a basketball school. Kentucky is a basketball school.
Actually, a basketball school.
On like men's, women's, whatever. It's a basketball school.
Yeah. Took the words right out of my mouth. Like, you got to decide, like, do you want to be like Kentucky, like full-fledged basketball school, but like, do you want it to be as important as it is right now, or even more important moving forward? Because like, the women's program under Kenny Brooks, if he continues to be the coach, like, this isn't that Final Four you went to last year. Like, he'll take you to another one.
It's not the end. Right.
It's not the end. Like, he'll take you to another one. Like, you saw what Clara Strack can do. You see what, you know, the freshman that did play this year. You see the potential there. And
where else we
recruits.
Go get in the transfer portal? I mean, like, Matilda Eck just came in this year, right? I mean, this is a guy that can go out and find some real players in that portal.
He pushes the right buttons. And yes, you know, can Witt go out and get another coach, like you mentioned, and probably do well with a hire for cheaper than what it may take to keep Kenny Brooks? Yeah, he could. Is it going to be like a Final Four level coach? Probably not. Like, it's really, really hard to make a Final Four. It's hard to do.
In the women's sport, it's extremely hard. I think it's harder than the men's. I think it could be harder than the men's.
It could be harder. You look at what's... I mean, South Carolina hasn't lost a game yet. Like, you saw what Gino Auriemma did at UConn for years and years and years and years. It is not easy, in the women's game especially, to break through and make a Final Four, let alone like try to compete for a national title. The fact that Kenny Brooks is doing that in an era with Kim Mulkey and Gino Auriemma and Dawn Staley.
And like, Caitlin Clark.
And Caitlin Clark. Thank you. Like, he took a team to a Final Four. Like, it's going to come down to, like, how important does Virginia Tech want basketball to be, you know, on the women's side in the context of this conversation. But then in addition, like, what does Kenny want? Does he want to keep building what he's done here and take a perennial like top 15 or 20 program and turn into a perennial top 10 program year over year over year? Does he want to do that? Or does he want to, comparing him to Buzz would be a little disingenuous because they're two totally different personalities, totally different people, but does he want to be like a program builder like that, right? Where he's on to his next turnaround, like, reclamation project.
Right.
That's a question only Kenny Brooks can answer.
They're built very differently, and we know about what he's done in Virginia. He spent his whole career in the state of Virginia. And so clearly I think it'd be very difficult to leave, but it's interesting. And I saw someone tweet out, like, the longer this goes with no news, like, that's probably good news, right?
Yeah. I was expecting, to be honest, Pete, like, I know you and I were texting last night.
I'm worried actually, if I look at my phone right now.
I know. You and I were texting, like, right before the game tipped off, and we agreed to do this pod tonight. And I was thinking to myself, like, I know we're going to talk about Kenny, but, like, are we going to be talking about Kenny in the context of he's already left, or is it just going to be kind of...
I was hoping we'd be previewing the next game, is what, obviously. Yeah, like, that's what I was hoping for. I texted you.
Yep.
But we were able to have this conversation. I think that was a good way to assess it, and we'll move on to our next topic. But, man, what a run it was these last couple years with those, you know, those three stud girls that we had, and hopefully we'll keep one of those girls around.
Yeah.
I'm talking specifically about Kitley King and Amor, but
yep.
so many great players over the last 2 years that made what we've done possible. All right, let's take a minute to talk about our sponsor. The 2D Pokies Under the Influence podcast is brought to you by Roback. You guys know Roback. It's the performance activewear designed for those who crave activity. It's the polo company that brought you the Commonwealth, and they brought us the Berg quarter zip, which was so beautiful. And the two-tone maroon is awesome. The Commonwealth is back in stock. It's the white polo with the little maroon Virginias on it. Everyone's got them. If you don't have one, you need to go out. You need to order one. So head to rowback.com. Use code 2DEEPVT for 20% off your order. They have hoodies, tees, quarter zip. You can put in a big order. Joggers. They got great women's stuff. My wife loves their stuff. And so head over to their site, load up your cart, use code 2DEEPVT for 20% off that order. Rowback Crave Activity. Mike, you are drinking water, getting hydrated tonight.
I am.
Correct?
Okay. I am.
I will talk about my beer. I'm having, this is fitting for those people who still live in DC.
Ooh.
The Cherry Blossom IPA by Victory Brewing Company. I was actually at Victory Brewing downtown Philly. They have a new location, newer anyway. It's been around for a couple of years. Right on the parkway, on Ben Franklin Parkway. And it's awesome. Their beers, I love their beers. Obviously, it's a Pennsylvania brewery, so I can get it pretty easily where I'm at in South Jersey. But the, this Cherry Blossom IPA, it says it's got like a little bit of tart cherry flavor with some like fruity hop aroma. I'm not really getting too tart because I'm not a big fan of sours or even really tart beers in general. This thing's phenomenal. It's kind of got a clear amber look to it. It's not one of those like New England hazies. It's just kind of more you're straight up and down. It does have like, I guess, a floral note to it. And I always love those earthy, like spruce tips and pine flavors and things. So any kind of like that earthy flavor, like I do enjoy a little bit of fruity flavor, a little bit of earthy tones, 7% alcohol. I would recommend the Cherry Blossom IPA, and those cherry blossoms down in DC should be just about at full bloom. It's always hard to nail it because if there's a windy day, they're all gone.
They hit peak bloom last weekend because we had like a week where it was like 75 degrees for like 4 days straight. And so they peaked.
Right,
it was like
the
earliest they've peaked in years, apparently.
When I lived down there, my mom and dad always wanted to come down and visit and see the cherry blossoms.
Yep.
And so they're like, what day's the day? I'm like, I got the calendar out, you know, I'm on like Capitol Hill weather gang, like trying to figure out which day they're going to peak. Cause my mom's gonna be mad if they're all gone. But yeah, it's so challenging to figure out when the day's going to be the day.
Yep. Yep. No doubt about it. So they're making a big deal about it on local news.
Let's do some football talk, man. We got spring football. It's happening. Although I would say the news has been limited. I think because there are so many knowns across the roster because of how many guys we brought back. I mentioned on our last episode that Kelly Lawson is missing this spring because a surgical procedure. And that is a bummer because we knew our linebacker struggled last year and we were hoping to see some improvement from him, but he's missing the spring. Montavious Cunningham starting out at guard in terms of a position news. We hired Gunnar Brewer. He's the director of high school relations along with James Johnson now. And actually, that's a good segue to the recruiting commitment because Gunnar gets here and then a few days later, we pick up a 4-star linebacker commitment in the class of 2025. How about that for your first week on the job?
From a high school right down the road from where I live, too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. About 25 minutes from Eastern View. So
Eastern View High School, 2025 linebacker Brett Clatterball. A guy on the message boards has been talked about a lot. People have been kind of waiting to see what he's going to do. But I still wasn't expecting the commitment to come out in March. I don't know about you. It just felt like, oh, this is nice. This is a nice little boost to our recruiting push heading into the spring and summer.
Out of nowhere. Like I was out just, you know, carrying on my day. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, we got to commit? Okay. And then I was like, oh, Clatterball. Because I saw the speculation on the message boards as well. I was like, okay, like, this would be legit. His offer list was crazy. Now, you know, you can have the conversation about, okay, what's committable, what's not.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big-time prospect, Pete. Like, he is a big-time player. And Virginia Tech has been clamoring for this kind of linebacker commit under Brent Pry. Because, like, his big calling card, everybody loves to point to Micah Parsons. So you're trying to find, okay, who's going to be that type of player for Virginia Tech under Brent Pry? And to land a linebacker of his stature is really, really impressive. So yeah, this is a big time commit, no doubt about it. And to
I'm losing you on like a little bit of a connection real quick, but you're talking about Clatterball and you're right. Like it's a huge commitment. And in those offers, I just want to talk about them briefly. Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, Notre Dame, Penn State, Louisville, Maryland, UNC. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Yep.
When you're a top, I think he's right around the 300 mark, top number 311 player in the country, according to the composite, you're going to have a lot of offers. And what's cool about him too is that it's another VA kid. This is the fourth in the class. Looks like I lost Mike. That's okay. Well, I'm going to keep filling you in and see if he hops back in the chat. But yeah, the fourth kid in the class from the state of Virginia, and there's only five commits in the class. And so we're already heavy in the top 25 of the Virginia high school rankings. I think last year we had four in the top 15. This year, this is already our fourth in the top 25. And he is a top 10 guy. He's number eight in the state. And so huge commitment from Clatterbaugh and you know, linebacker too. We obviously got Gabe Williams. I just expressed my displeasure about the fact that Kelly Lawson's not going to be here for spring. And so we need linebackers. And that's a position that if you go back to the days of that 2003 Miami game that we had talked about earlier, or and into 05, the Daryl Tapp days, the Vince Hall, the Xavier Deeby, like that's what me and my friends talk about when we talk about linebacker play, is those old school Virginia Tech linebackers. And bringing in four stars is a good way to get back to that level, and I'm pumped about it. The only commitment in the class that is out of state currently is Keldon Ryan, the quarterback commit, who I think has been around. I think he was around just recently at Tech. So it's looking like a good class. And last year we had our highest average recruit ranking per recruit on 247 and Rivals since both of their inceptions. And so if we could keep this, right now we're about 87. Last year we're at 88 in terms of the average per recruit rating on 247. Keep bringing in some more four stars, some higher level guys. We'll get it back to 88 again, or maybe 89 or 90, because I think Clatterbaugh was a 90 point something, like 90.3 or whatever, a 90 on the 247 in-house and a 90 point something on the composite. But things are coming along in the recruiting game, and this was a good step leading into summer when things really start to heat up. A couple notes on spring practice. Allie Jennings, fully healthy and has looked great in the early parts of spring practice. And a couple of the younger receivers also looking good. Chance Wiggins, Keelan Adams, who just got here, also playing well. And there's other notes. I mean, Drones has looked pretty good, especially in the workouts. He was looking great. But still not a ton of news. As we get closer to the spring game, we will have a few more nuggets to share with you guys. But I got into this discussion on one of the threads about the portal post-spring, because there's a certain well-known running back who's been at Virginia Tech a couple times, and people are talking about maybe bringing him in the portal. And I kind of was talking about, like, do we really want a running back? If we were to have someone come in the portal, taking up one of our scholarships that we don't have right now, would we want it to be a running back? And it started me thinking, like, what position would I want if I had one portal spot going into 2024, right? Well, what were our two positions we struggled at the most last year? It was offensive line and it was linebacker, but we also had a fair amount of safety injury and issues, right? And so I love Jalen Stroman. I think he's tremendous, but he's missed some time with targeting calls. He's missed some time with injury. Nazir Peoples missed some time with injury. It's a concern because Mos Phillips is still young. Jalen Jones is still transitioning. And so I think safety might be my choice, to make a long story short. Like, if you gave me one portal spot, I think I would go O-line or safety. Because those, and it, what's funny to think about it too, is this time last year, not until after spring ball, did APR commit to the Hokies. Think about that. Maybe our best defensive player wasn't even on the team for spring. And so that's the kind of acquisition that is possible post-spring practice. And this is something Josh Pate was talking about. Like, this period of time after everyone's spring practice is over could be absolutely wild in the portal. Like, guys are absolutely tampering. There are coaches tampering all over the place, trying to backfill their rosters with guys on other teams, knowing full well those guys won't be on that team and will be on their own team going into next year. And so I have a feeling this post spring portal era could be pretty crazy. And that means, one, we're probably going to have some attrition. We're going to have some attrition because, and Mike, I was just talking a little bit about just our spring scholarships and bringing in a guy in the portal after spring practice were to be over. And we're at 81 or 82 scholarships right now. We have another 6 kids that got to come in next year. So there's going to be attrition. And if you want to take anyone in the portal, there's got to be even more attrition. But if you could have one position to come in post-spring to fill in a gap on our team, Mike, what position would you give that scholarship to?
This might be lazy. But I was looking at the depth chart that they released for spring ball. I'm a little bit worried about quarterback behind Kyren Drones.
Really? Okay, so quarterback is what you're thinking.
I'm a little bit. Now, I think the easier answer is, okay, grab another linebacker. Okay, grab another lineman. Like, you can never have enough of those guys. Safety, I think, would be a popular answer because just the unknowns, and there's going to be some shifting around the back end. Like, I think, you know, it's all fair. But
I'm losing you again, dude. And I don't know if it's on me or on you, but you're fading out. But I heard what you're saying, and I had agreed with your safety take. That was kind of what I was saying initially, O-line or safety. A linebacker would be one I'm cut because I did like the fact that we brought in Brumfield, but I'm still concerned about linebacker. It's a huge concern for me. And so we'll see what happens. But you know there's going to be attrition. And there is some fat on the roster to cut. I'm not going to get into names, but there's always guys that the coaches can identify might not be right for this program going forward, and those guys will probably move on and grab a spot somewhere else. And so, there goes Mike. That's okay. We had a good pod. We covered just about everything we needed to cover while the internet was still operating properly. And I don't really have much else to add here. I am so pumped to get down to Blacksburg for the spring game and just get into it with everyone from all the various podcasts that we love, the Boundary Corner and Dan and Treadmill and all those guys. It's going to be a blast. There could be some special guests. I'm working on a few contacts to see who else we could bring into the fold, but the spring game pregame show will be awesome. So if you're down in Blacksburg, make sure to get over to Tots right when they open at noon because we're going to have a blast. I think that's going to cover it. Mike might hop in here. I will just give him a call after this. tell him we closed it out. But thank you for watching. It was a fun basketball season. It was a very fun end to the wrestling season, getting that national championship. And there will be more spring football coverage coming your way over the next couple weeks. And until next time, Go Hokies.